death. The woman who must be Jules's Aunt Kara looks up toward the sunset and the fading light. She looks a little like Madrigal, he supposes, around the eyes and the shape of her face. But the rest is all Grandma Kate, the same hardness and the same firm lines. He feels like he is looking at a photo of Kate from 20 years ago. I need to return to the city, Madrigal says, to see what's happening. Stay, says Kara. I don't want to have to search the capital for you, too. She puts a hand on Braddock's back as he snuffles Billy's clothes. It is sad to see the bear so diminished. The days in the cage have lessened him. The poisoner's arrows have lessened him. Fear is not a lesson that most great Browns ever learn. I'm sorry, boy, Billy says. I didn't bring you anything. It's not that. Kara pats the bear fondly. He's looking for Arsinoe. He knows you've been near her. He may not be her familiar, but whatever low magic she used to bind him is strong. She looks at Madrigal and her crow. We must get word to our parents. Send Arya. We have to do more than that, Madrigal protests. We will. Well, what? But Madrigal takes up her bird and whispers to her before tossing her into the air. I'll speak with my father, says Billy. He can press his friends here to release Joseph and Jules. And Luca and the temple will have Arsinoe and Mirabella released by nightfall, surely. Funny, Madrigal says without stopping her movement. You never struck me as an idiot. We are in Indrid Down now, Billy, where the poisoners rule. And if you think they aren't going to take this opportunity to get rid of Arsinoe and the Legion cursed naturalist, you're fooling yourself. You don't know that. No, she's right, Kara says, and Madrigal blinks. We need backing here. Natalia Aaron will try to get away with something if she can. Even if we ride straight through, says Madrigal, switch for fresh horses. Nobody in Wolf Spring will make it back in time, not even if Matthew takes them on the Whistler. I'm not thinking of Wolf Spring. I'm thinking of Bastion City. The warriors we saw in the stands today. They may still be here. We may be able to find them before they leave the capital. Why would they help us? Billy asks. Because of Jules, Madrigal exclaims excitedly. She is not only one of ours, she is one of theirs. I still say it's unnecessary, Billy says. My father has clout here, friends within the Westwoods and the Aarons. He won't leave Joseph to rot. I'm going to wait with him at the Highburn for news. He'll get it sorted. You'll see. And when he doesn't, says Kara, you come back to help. We'll be here with the warriors in red-lined cloaks. The Volroy Cells. Jules presses her cheek against the bars of the small, cold cell. A nice change from pressing her cheek against the hard stone walls. She does not know exactly where inside the Volroy they are, but they are down deep, much deeper than Arsinoe and Mirabella. The trip they took to get here was full of stairs, and full of thrown elbows. Camden rests her big, heavy head on Jules's leg. Jules scratches her ears. They have only slept a little, with no sense of how much time has passed. They have moved past tired to restless and back again. How is Cam doing? Joseph asks from a cell one down from hers. She's nervous, Jules replies. We should have been dragged up before the council by now.
Maybe they mean to forget about us.
Joseph's voice is deliberately light.
And keep us down here forever.
A hot ball rises in Jules's throat. Let them try. Kate would never allow it, nor would Joseph's mother. And between the two families, they could cause more than enough loud trouble to rattle the errands. Joseph, Jules whispers, I'm sorry I got you into all this.
There's nowhere else I'd rather be, except for maybe in that cell with you.
Jules smiles softly.
Their one afternoon together in Joseph's bed feels like years ago, and it makes her sad, as if the memory belongs to another time, before the Queen's hunt and Arsinoe almost dying, before everything went so horribly wrong. I'm sorry I left you that day, after the Queen's hunt. I'm sorry I disappeared to the Black Cottage.
You had to. You had to save Arsinoe. I'd have told you to do it if you hadn't done it yourself.
I know, but I was thinking of you, Joseph.
It's all right. Arsinoe comes first.
He chuckles.
I stopped being jealous about that when we were 8.
You were jealous for 2 years?
Just about. I guess it took that long for me to love her, too. And because you have always been the most important person to me. Everybody has that, I think. And for me, it will always be you.
He sighs.
At least for these last 48 hours.
Don't say that, she says fiercely. We will get out of here. That day in your bedroom? It won't be our only day.
Best day of my life,
he whispers, and she hears him shift in his cell.
Jules?
Yeah?
If something does go wrong, if we can't save Arsinoe, I want you to come away with me, off Fenburn. I could make a life for us out there, someplace we won't see her ghost every time we look outside.
Jules swallows.
If she cannot save Arsinoe, she will see her ghost every day, no matter where she is.
Arsinoe will find a way out of this. She always does.
I know, says Joseph. But if she doesn't, if she can't, will you go with me?
Jules looks down at Camden, who blinks up at her with hopeful yellow-green eyes. Yes, Joseph. I'll go with you. The Highburn Hotel. Billy waits with his father at the Highburn, staring out the window with his arms crossed over his chest. They have been waiting for so long he could burst. He wants to pace, but his father would only give him that disappointed look. So instead he stares at the Volroy, thinking about Arsinoe trapped inside, hoping she is giving the guards a hard time. Perhaps Jules's Aunt Kara was right, and he should have stayed with them and helped them mobilize the warriors. It has been too long with no word from the council, and as outsiders, he and his father will be among the last to receive news. The sky outside has darkened to gray. The woods in the distance are visible only as a blurry smudge. Kara will not have waited this long. Their plan will have already begun, and he will be left out of it. Kara. She was not at all what he expected after hearing Joseph's and Jules's fond remembrances of her. In his mind, she was a nurturer, kind and comforting, a woman who would give up her freedom for the love of a child, even when the child was not hers. But the woman he met was hard and decisive. Perhaps the Black Cottage had changed her. Or perhaps there were more sides to a woman than he had ever understood. The knock at the door surprises him. It is the Volroy messenger, but he didn't see him ride up. The young boy hands Billy's father a sealed letter and bows before leaving.
What does it say? Billy asks as his father reads.
He knew Arsinoe would not have to stay in the cells long. Perhaps they have already been released. William stuffs the letter into his jacket pocket. His face betrays no feeling, no interest one way or the other. It almost never does, and that has kept Billy off balance for most of his life.
The crowning is tomorrow, his father says.
What crowning?
The Queen's, William says impatiently.
Queen Catherine, your future bride.
Billy blinks. He cannot comprehend this news. Not his future bride, never his future bride.
But what of Arsinoe? What of Mirabella?
William shrugs.
According to the letter, the Wolf Spring girl has probably been executed already. The other one will survive until after the crowning, and after your wedding, to be executed publicly.
You have to stop it, Billy says. His father raises his eyes and Billy backs up a step.
Make a deal with the Aarons. Keep Arsinoe and Mirabella alive in secret. I know that you can. I know that you've been working with them since before this started.
Stay calm. You knew what would happen.
It's different now.
It is. We've won.
His father turns away. Billy can practically see him forget that his son is there, as visions of expansion roll through his head. Plans for their new stream of assets, exclusive trade with the island for the next generation, and the backing of the poisoners to silence any competitor who does not like it.
You've done well,
his father murmurs distractedly.
I'm proud of you, son.
And I have long wanted that, Billy whispers. But why are you proud, father, when I have done nothing but try to understand you?
I fell in love with the wrong queen, and I wouldn't poison Mirabella, so you had to poison her yourself.
I hadn't figured that part out, to be honest. I didn't until Lucas said that Katarine hadn't done it by touch. Then I remembered you, lingering by our table that night.
It didn't kill her, and it kept the alliance. It made you a king.
If I accept.
His father stares.
And I will accept, Billy goes on, as long as you go to the Aarons now and stop Arsinoe's execution.
Let her go. She's as good as dead. She probably is already.
It won't hurt to try.
Billy,
William says firmly,
you'll do as I say. I won't. You will. I won't,
Billy shouts, and his father draws his hand back as if to strike him. But he stops short when Billy does not flinch. Billy has never noticed before that his father is not as large as he once was. But as the years passed, Billy has actually grown to be taller. William looks down in disgust and searches his coat for a cigar.
You won't throw away everything for one girl, he mutters. You're wrong, father,
Billy says, right before he turns and walks out the door. The Queen Crowned. The Crowning. Katarine stands on the wooden block, studying her reflection in the mirror, as Natalia straightens the skirt of her gown.
Some naturalist sympathizer has freed the bear, Natalia says.
We are searching the city, but have not yet found him.
Let him go, says Katarine.
The bear does not matter anymore. All that matters now is the black satin against her skin, and the guests gathering in the inner chamber of the Volroy.
When you dressed me last year for my birthday, did you think that we would ever be here, moments before my crowning?
Of course I did, Kat, Natalia says. But Katarine knows the truth. She has surprised them all. Natalia helps her down from the block, and Katarine twirls once. The gown is simple but elegant. She wears no jewels, and her hair is loose and similarly unadorned. She looks strangely innocent, almost like the girl she used to be.
You are beautiful, Queen Katarine.
Natalia slides Katarine's hair back over her shoulder.
I wonder that Peter is not here to see this. It seems a shame.
Katarine frowns. Oh, well, she says. I will not miss one guest amongst so many. And she refuses to think of Peter on a day like today.
Soon she will be crowned.
Then she will murder her sister Arsinoe, for real this time, with no escaping. And then she will be married. She adjusts the fingers of her simple black gloves and smiles.
So you are not disappointed, Natalia asks, that all of this must be done in such haste?
Not at all, replies Katarine. I only care that it is done.
Katerine's crowning is small by crowning standards. The public is not allowed to attend. Only the Black Council and the temple priestesses and members of the Aaron family. It is a solemn affair, with no joy on the faces of the priestesses. No joy on the faces of the Aarons, either. Only nervousness. At her ceremonial crowning during next spring's Beltane Festival, they will do better. High Priestess Luca presides over the affair, straight-backed and imposing in her formal robes, especially for someone so old. She begins by reading the council and the temple's joint decree. Katerine would be crowned, and Arsinoe and Mirabella executed by her. The decree does not mention her sisters by name. After today, they will never be mentioned by name again. The air inside the chamber is cool and stale as Katerine kneels before the High Priestess. Luca will set the crown upon Katerine's head herself, symbolically uniting the council and the temple once more. Katerine tries not to smirk. It cannot be easy for the proud woman to admit that she was wrong. As Luca bends her head to pray, Katerine glances at her guests. Nicholas, with his secret smile. William Chatworth, the father of the suitor Natalia says she must choose. Genevieve, with steely violet eyes. And Natalia herself. The prayers end and the attending priestesses rise. They offer Katerine water from a silver pitcher. They say it was collected from the River Crow, which runs down from the peak of Mount Horn. Though if it is, she does not know how they managed to get it there so quickly. Perhaps they always keep a pitcher on hand. But no matter. She drinks, and it runs down her chin ice cold. And Katerine is surprised to see that it is Cora, the head priestess of Indra Down Temple, who holds the pitcher. "Rise, Queen Katerine," Luca says, and opens her palms. "Daughter of the goddess, daughter of the island." Her hands have been anointed with scented oil and a little blood. At a normal crowning, the blood would have been taken from the stag killed during the hunt. Katerine wonders whose blood it is now. She would have offered to cut the throat of Arsinoe's bear had someone not turned it loose. Except for Luca's few words, the crowning is largely silent. They do not ask her for vows or oaths. The queen is made of the island, as the island is made of her. They have no right and no need to ask her to swear. The High Priestess reaches for the wooden tattoo tool, simply carved, its tip a short bundle of needles. The tattooed crown has not been done for generations. It was Natalia's idea. Perhaps a bad one, Katerine thinks, as she watches Luca's hands shake. She will be lucky if her crown does not zig and zag across her forehead. "Do not worry," Luca whispers, as if reading Katerine's mind. "I still put bracelets on many of my own priestesses." She places the tool to Katerine's brow. The first strike is a shock, and there is no time to recover before the next, and the next, a seemingly never-ending sequence of pain as Luca taps the needles and black ink into Katerine's skin just below her hairline. It takes a long time, a lot of time and pain, but it is a crown that will not fade and cannot be taken from her head to give to another. "Rise, Katerine," Luca says. "The queen crowned of Fenburn Island." Katerine stands, and the assembled guests clap until she holds up her hand. "I would choose my consort," she says. "As you will," Luca replies. "Whom do you choose?" "I choose..." Katerine looks at William Chatworth. He seems to her a piggish man, and too smug and confident when his son is not even bothered to be present. Natalia must be mad to recommend him. But Natalia is not the queen. I choose the suitor Nicholas Martell.
The Volroy cells.
Arsinoe has been banging her head against the stone wall for what seems like hours. But there is no way to tell for sure. The only way to gauge the passage of time is by the guard changes.
Are you feeling any better? She asks Mirabella.
Mirabella draws her leg up beneath her torn black skirt and braces her heel on the edge of the wooden bench.
I feel almost well, actually.
Whatever I was poisoned with, it seems to have run its course. It seems it was not meant to kill me.
Of course not, Arsinoe says. She was meant to kill you.
She sighs and leans back, flicks her hand toward the wooden door.
Can you burn us away out of here, then?
No. The wood is too thick. I would have to call fire so hot it would burn you up with it, if the smoke did not kill us first.
Arsinoe glances at her sister.
Mirabella has sloughed her light overlaid jacket to sit in a corseted bodice with wide black straps.
It must be true what they say, and elementals do not feel the drafts or the damp.
Why did they put you in a skirt? Arsinoe asks. Didn't they know they were dressing you for a duel?
I am wearing boots, Mirabella replies, and no slip or petticoat.
She rolls her head toward Arsinoe and smiles tiredly.
Appearances, appearances.
Arsinoe chuckles.
At least when we're dead, there'll be no more of that.
You think we are to die, then? Mirabella asks. And Arsinoe cocks her eyebrow.
She has to remind herself that her sister was not raised like she was.
Mirabella was treated as the queen. Death must seem impossible.
Arsinoe sighs. I don't think they'll let me out to cause any more trouble.
But you have the High Priestess and the Westwoods.
They're shrewd. Maybe they can barter you for me. Though I don't like to think about what they'll do to Jules and Joseph.
They will not do anything, Mirabella says, and the air in the cell begins to crackle.
Arsinoe stares down at her arm in wonder as the hairs rise and stand on end.
Do you promise? Arsinoe asks. If you get out of here, do you promise to take care of them?
Of course I will.
Arsinoe stands and stretches her back. Good. Because it's my fault, you know. Joseph being banished 5 years ago, Jules being poisoned after Beltane, even Cam getting mauled by that sick old bear.
They do not see it like that.
Of course they don't. They're too good.
Footsteps sound in the corridor.
It could be Billy, coming back to tell her that they will be released, free to kill another day. Even to be locked together in the tower would be preferable to this.
But the footsteps are too light, and accompanied by too many other footsteps, and there is too much rustling.
Catherine's face appears at the barred opening of the wooden door.
Sisters, Catherine says.
Her pretty, dark-lashed eyes flicker between Arsinoe and Mirabella, who stands up quickly and brushes dust and straw from her dress. Arsinoe waits for Catherine to say more, but she just stands before their cell, smiling, like she is waiting for something.
Mirabella gasps.
What? Arsinoe asks.
Her forehead, Mirabella whispers. Look at her forehead!
Arsinoe squints and peers through the bars.
A thin black line has been etched across Catherine's brow, just below her hairline.
I wanted to show you, Catherine says brightly, so there would be no confusion, so that no one could tell you lies. I wanted you to see my crown for yourselves.
Arsinoe swallows.
Is that what that is? She asks. I thought you must have rolled across a piece of coal.
Catherine laughs.
Joke all you want, but it is done. And I owe it to you, in part. Thanks to your grand pronouncements of mercy for each other, the council and the temple felt they had no choice.
Your refusal to kill made them finally see that I
and the only true queen born of this cycle.
Arsinoe scoffs. She should probably be afraid, but instead she is irritated, almost angry. Poor Mirabella looks as though she might be sick, seeing that crown painted on Catarine's forehead.
The only true queen? Arsinoe spits. The only killer?
But she was not always, Mirabella says.
You were not always, Catarine.
You were sweet once. We used to...
Do not try to make me guilty, Catarine interrupts. It had to be one of us. That is the way the game is played. That is what we are.
Have it your way, then, says Arsinoe.
Take us out of this cell and back to the arena. See which of us walks out.
Catarine clucks her tongue.
I'm afraid not, sister. You both had plenty of chances.
Have you come only to gloat? Mirabella asks.
Where is the High Priestess, or Sarah Westwood? Where are the Malones for Arsinoe? We would see them if this will truly come to pass.
Yes, Arsinoe says and waves her hand. Let them come and tell us this news.
You should go, Queen Catarine. And if you return... Arsinoe rises onto her tiptoes to look farther down on her smaller sister.
Bring a box to stand on.
Such darkness comes into Catarine's eyes that Arsinoe sinks back onto flat feet. Again, she thinks that there is something not right about Catarine. Something off. And she does not know why, but she is certain that the Aarons do not know what it is.
Open the door, Catarine orders.
Keys jangle and the door opens, and the new queen steps inside.
You misunderstand, she says, and Arsinoe and Mirabella step back as guards spill into the cell.
They herd Mirabella to the wall and grab Arsinoe's arms and hold her fast.
I have not come to tell you news. I have come to deliver your fate.
What are you talking about? Arsinoe jerks in the guard's grip.
On the island, only queens kill queens, Catarine says sweetly. That will not change just because two are traitors to their birthright. You, Arsinoe, are a queen. So you may not be executed by any other than one of your own.
She reaches into her sleeve and draws out a stoppered glass vial of amber liquid.
Guards, restrain Queen Mirabella.
Mirabella bares her teeth. Every torch lining the corridor of the prison flares nearly to the ceiling.
Tell her to be still, Catarine says to Arsinoe. Unless you want me to return later with the heads of the Legion Cursed Girl and her mountain cat.
The torch flames lower, and the heat vanishes as Mirabella ceases to struggle.
Fighting will not change this, Catarine continues. But the fates of your friends have not yet been decided.
You mean to poison us, Arsinoe says calmly.
Yes, but only you, for now. Queen Mirabella will be executed tomorrow morning in the square.
Catarine smiles meanly.
For that is what the High Priestess wishes.
No, Mirabella cries. You are lying. Catarine may not be lying, but she is certainly cruel. Arsinoe glances through the open door and into the hall. Jules and Joseph cannot have been taken that far. There are only so many floors of cells to take them to. Still, there are plenty of guards, strong armed guards. She can only hope that Mirabella is even stronger. They will not get another chance.
Come now. Let us get on with this, Catarine says. I'm still to be married this evening.
Don't fight, Arsinoe says to Mirabella. For Jules's and Joseph's sakes.
No, Arsinoe, no,
Mirabella protests, but the guards back her up against the wall. Arsinoe stares at the poison in Catarine's hand. She forces her eyes to widen. She takes a deep breath and another. Faster and faster.
It is not hard to seem frightened. She is frightened. Just not of what is inside of the vial.
Katarine removes the stopper, and Arsinoe pretends to lose her nerve, twisting, trying to pull free, her heels digging into the straw-lined floor. The look in Katarine's eyes is wickedly mirthful, and Arsinoe is tempted to forego her plan.
It would almost be worth it, just to see Katarine's face when she drinks the poison and does not die.
Lower her onto her back, Katarine orders.
Arsinoe kicks and screeches. She presses her lips together when Katarine bends over to pour the poison in, so that Katarine must force her mouth open, squeezing her cheeks with gloved fingers. The poison is oily, bitter-tasting. It smells sharply of vegetation. It runs into her mouth and down her throat, so much of it that she nearly chokes and coughs it up onto her face, making the guards reel backward. She hears Mirabella screaming on the other side of the cell and feels the floor tremble as a great crack of lightning strikes the fortress above. Katarine cries out. She pushes away from Arsinoe and runs for the door, covering her head.
You, she says and points at Mirabella. You will have to be weakened before your execution. I will not have any shows of lightning diverting the people's attention.
Are you so afraid? Mirabella shouts, with tears in her voice.
She shoves past the guards and falls to her knees at Arsinoe's side, and Arsinoe coughs and convulses. Katarine watches until Arsinoe begins to grow still. As Mirabella's weight presses down on her chest, Arsinoe lets her eyes drift shut.
I am not afraid, Katarine says. And I am not without mercy.
She turns to the guards.
Let her cry a while over the corpse before you take it away, and then prepare it for viewing. I would have it on display at the execution. So afterward, they can lie side by side.
Mirabella pulls Arsinoe's limp form onto her lap. She weeps so loudly that it is hard to hear when the sounds of Katarine's escort fade into the corridor. And even then, Arsinoe waits until the only sound she hears is Mirabella, before she finally reopens her eyes.
The Wedding. As Nicholas takes his oaths before the High Priestess, Katarine's mind wanders. It is not that she is not excited to be marrying him. She is. But it feels almost like the denouement. After the thrill of the crown inked into her skin, after the joy of pouring poison down her sister's frightened throat, she had waited so long for that. She could almost spin in place remembering how Arsinoe struggled and how Mirabella screamed. She slumps, sees Natalia watching, and straightens up again. It is just that there are so many oaths. Nicholas is not a queen, and he must swear and swear and swear his allegiance. Only Natalia and the Black Council are present for the wedding, with Luca and a few priestesses. The small dark room in the east tower is lit by three tall candelabras. Someone should have opened a window. The reek of the sacred incense is making her want to cough.
Drink and be anointed, Luca says.
They make him drink from her crowning cup and dab him with blood and oil. Poor Nicholas. He tries hard to look like he belongs there, but he keeps looking at her. Like she might come to him instead of standing to one side. No one told him that the wedding of a king consort is more to the goddess than it is to the queen, that she will not even touch him, that they will not even kiss. Katarine studies him in the candlelight. He is so handsome, and a good match for her, but he is not Peter. A tight, cold ball settles in the pit of her stomach. Peter tried to kill her, but only because he thought she would be killed anyway, and killed horribly by serrated knives and strangers pulling her apart. Of course he could have hidden her instead, but that is not the Aaron way. Aaron's win, or they lose.
all or nothing, and Catherine never expected him to be any different.
Finally, Nicholas finishes his vows and is allowed to face the queen. The priestesses bow to her, even Luca. Then they file out of the room, followed by the council. Natalia leaves without looking her in the eye, still angry about her choice of suitor. But Natalia is as a mother to her, and will not stay angry forever. Nicholas takes her gloved hands.
"That is it?" he asks. "I thought they would take my blood or burn their symbol into my chest. I thought we would be bound together by lengths of cord."
"Is that what they do in your country?"
"No. In my country, we would both take vows, and my bride would wear white."
"She would not if she were a queen," Catherine says. Nicholas lifts her hand to his mouth. He kisses it so greedily that his teeth graze the fabric. He has been respectful in his courtship. He has not even kissed her properly on the mouth. But when he pulls her forward and crushes her to his chest, his hands slide into her hair and cup the back of her head, he is not gentle or shy. Catherine raises her elbows and pushes out of his grip.
"Not now," she says. "What do you mean, not now? We are married. You are mine."
"We are each other's," she corrects him. He reaches for her again, but she moves away, her gown rustling like a rattlesnake's tail. "I would see Natalia. I do not like it when she is angry with me."
"See her later, Catherine. I don't want to wait. I would have you out of those clothes, skin to skin."
His eyes move over her hungrily.
"I have been patient, and we are here in our castle."
"You have been patient," she says, "but our wedding night will not be here. With everything so rushed and sudden, there was no time to prepare even a bedchamber in the West Tower. It is all covered over in dust sheets, full of coughing priestesses chasing away cobwebs."
"Where, then? And when?"
"My rooms at Greavesdrake. Natalia has arranged a carriage to take us there." When someone opens the door to Natalia's study, high in the East Tower, she expects a servant, some good and thoughtful boy come to bring her a hot cup of poisoned tea. But it is not. It is William Chatworth.
"Some other time, William," she says, and returns to the letter she has been scribbling,
another letter to her brother Christoph, seeking the whereabouts of Peter, as well as to tell him what has transpired. Perhaps the news will finally jolt her brother out from underneath that wife of his, away from her country estate, and back to the capital where he belongs.
"Not some other time. Now."
William strides into the room and helps himself to a pour of her brandy, so fast that she can barely slap it out of his hand.
"It is tainted," she says, as they stare at the shattered wet mess upon the floor,
with nightshade and fresh elderberry. Chatworth exhales. He flexes his fist and releases it. Then he swings back hard and slaps Natalia across the face. Her head turns. She takes a step back, mostly from shock. It is shock more than the pain that makes her eyes water.
"Perhaps I should have let you drink it," she says.
The impact has driven her teeth into her cheek, and she spits a little blood down at his shoes.
"But then again, I see that you are drunk already. You married your brat to the Martell boy. There was nothing I could do. You were there. She made her choice in front of everyone. Perhaps if your son had bothered to show up. So say she changed her mind, that she was angry at him for not being at the crowning."
"I cannot," Natalia says calmly. "She is the queen, and we had to proceed quickly. We are in a precarious place."
"Undo it." "I said I cannot."
Natalia grimaces, tired of his breath and his mainland concerns. His normally clear, handsome eyes are squinted and swollen. She does not like him like this, though perhaps this is what he truly is underneath, angry and ugly,
and small. They are wed. He is on his way to her bedchamber now.
What does it matter? She can sleep with him and then marry Billy later. Your queens are not ladies. None of you are fit to be true wives. My son will have to teach her.
He will not teach her anything, Natalia snaps. Now leave, William. You are drunk.
But Chatworth does not leave. His face turns red, and spittle flies from his lips.
I've spent years feeding Joseph Sandrin to get Billy a place on Fenburn, to get him a crown. I poisoned the elemental, and before that, the girl in Wolf's Spring.
We will not forget it.
Natalia turns her back. A mistake, perhaps, but she cannot bear to look at him any longer.
You will have as much of our trade as I can manage. I do not think Nicholas's family will be overly diligent. All that you lack is the title. And for that, you get to keep your son. That must please you, surely.
He falls quiet, and Natalia begins scribbling on her letter again. His hands wrapping around her neck from behind are such a surprise that she does not even cry out. He is strong, and so angry that it is only moments before Natalia's vision swims. Her hands claw at his fingers, and then at her table, for anything to help her. All she has is a glass paperweight, a pretty lilac thing, rounded and not very large, a gift from Genevieve. She picks it up and twists as far as she can to smash it against the side of his head. The blow is glancing, but makes him stumble, and she falls to the ground, gasping. She tries to call for help, but her voice comes out a croak. Then William kicks her in the stomach, and every muscle in her body clenches tight. He hits her and hits her without a sound. She stares into his drunken, bloodshot eyes, hearing nothing but her heartbeat and his labored breathing.
I cannot end like this, she thinks. I am Natalia Aaron.
She puts her arms up to fight, clawing wildly.
God, she gasps. Katarine!
And then Chatworth's hands close around her throat again, and Natalia's world goes dark. Rose steps into the threshold to find the mainlander standing over Natalia.
This is your fault, he is muttering, and spits at the motionless body. You should have done what you were to—
His words cut off abruptly when Roe enters. She sweeps past him in her white robes and kneels to feel for Natalia's pulse, even though she knows she will not find one. Her neck is crushed. Her eyes are red with burst blood vessels.
Clean it up, the mainlander says. Clean it up and find me someone else to deal with.
Rose stands. She looks him in the eyes, and without a word she draws her serrated knife and sinks the blade deep between his ribs. The expression on his face as she carves him up from lungs to heart is delicious to her old war gift. Were it not for the vows she took to the temple to leave her gift behind, she would push him with her mind, throw him up against the wall so hard he bounced.
You,
he gasps.
You!
You should not have touched her, mainlander.
She yanks her knife free. He staggers backward, his hand fluttering at the blood pouring from his side. Then he drops to the rug, dead even before he lands. Ro cleans the blade on the black band of her robes. The blood can remain there for who knows how long, invisible, her secret badge. She calls out for aid, and two initiates come running. They moan and clap their hands over their mouths when they reach the door.
Roll him up in a rug, Rose says, and dispose of him in the river.
It takes them too long to respond for her liking, but they are new, so she tries to be patient.
What about Mistress Aaron? Asks the taller when she finds her voice.
Rose stares down at Natalia's body. So much trouble she has caused them over the years. But Natalia was of the island,
of the goddess, like Ro herself is. And at the end, she died an ally. Go and find her sister. Bring her here and tell her what has happened. Tell her gently.
The Volroy cells.
I still do not understand, Mirabella whispers. So Katarine really did shoot you with the poisoned bolt?
Right, Arsinoe says, lying on the floor of their cell, still pretending to be poisoned and dead.
But you did not die of poison, because you cannot die of poison.
Were you really wearing thick leather armor underneath your clothes?
No.
Then how did you not die of the bolt wound?
Just be glad I didn't, Arsinoe whispers. Now go on weeping.
Mirabella glances over her shoulder. Unlike Arsinoe, Mirabella was not born for the stage. Her fake cries sound like a harbor seal Arsinoe and Jules found beside the cove once, with a bellyache and horrible gas.
Not so loud, Arsinoe hisses. We don't want them to give you all night to mourn, just enough so they can hear you and believe that I'm dead.
Mirabella pretends to sniffle this time, much more softly, and Arsinoe closes her eyes. She must try to be patient. After all, Mirabella's first tears were real, before she looked down and realized that Arsinoe was grinning. Mirabella quiets, and Arsinoe opens one eye.
They crowned her, Mirabella murmurs. I cannot believe they crowned her.
And order your execution, Arsinoe adds. Good goddess, they really made you want to be a queen, didn't they? They held that crown out for you like a prize?
I am angry about being executed, Mirabella says and scowls. But there must have been some reason why Luca would let them.
Because we gave them no choice, Arsinoe squeezes her sister's hand. But you have to be brave now. I can't get out of here without you.
Get out of here to what? Mirabella asks bitterly. I will not go back to Rolanth, to a temple who would see me killed. Not even if they imprisoned Katarine instead. Not even if they said you could live.
Which they would never say, Arsinoe mutters.
They are fugitives now. Exiles.
Arsinoe cannot go back to Wolfspring, any more than Mirabella can return to Rolanth. She cannot go back to the Malones and get them in worse trouble than they may already face.
The island crowned its queen, Arsinoe says. Another poisoner.
And not even the strongest poisoner of the litter, she humps.
I don't know about you, but I don't want anything more to do with them.
Nor do I, Mirabella agrees.
So what do we do? Stand side by side united tomorrow as we are executed?
No. You have a terrible sense of rebellion.
Arsinoe swats her. Then she lies back and knocks her head against the straw-covered floor.
The island crowned its queen, Mirabella murmurs. You are right. So perhaps it is not that we are done with it, but that it is done with us. Perhaps it will let us go.
Arsinoe looks up hopefully, but the hope is fleeting.
I've tried that. Twice.
You have not tried it with me.
That is true.
Mirabella's gift is so strong, it could tear a hole through the mist. And dying at sea would be better anyway than dying at the hands of the Aarons.
Mirabella holds her hand out.
All right, Arsinoe says and takes it.
She grins until footsteps sound down the corridor. Then she goes limp.
So much must go their way for their escape to work.
But this is their only chance.
The key turns in the lock. The door swings open. Guards shuffle inside, murmuring apologies. To them and every other guard they will encounter, Arsinoe and Mirabella are still queens, and the sisters will use that to their advantage.
Forgive us, Queen Mirabella, but we have to take her.
No!
Mirabella throws herself across Arsinoe's chest.
A few moments more.
Arsinoe wishes she could open her eyes to see how many guards there are. From their footsteps, she would guess no more than 3.
Come now. Any longer will only make it harder.
Mirabella pitches such a fit that Arsinoe almost laughs. But her acting is much better now.
Take Queen Mirabella aside, the guard says, and Mirabella shouts and struggles and makes a general ruckus.
They lift Arsinoe by the arms, and she lets her head fall back. She waits until they have her hoisted high enough that she can get her feet underneath her, and then she takes her chance. She jerks her right arm loose and punches the guard straight across the face. The poor girl crumples like a dropped sack of potatoes. Jules would be proud. Arsinoe twists her left arm, prepared to pull and pull, but her luck holds. The shock of seeing her come back to life has loosened the other guard's fingers. So Arsinoe draws back and hits her, too. The last guard holding Mirabella stares at Arsinoe in wonder. He is a skinny thing, not much older than Joseph's little brother Jonah.
What?
He stammers.
How?
He lets go of Mirabella and takes a few disoriented steps. Arsinoe squares herself to fight before he can collect his wits and alert the rest of the prison. But to her surprise, Mirabella threads her fingers together and swings down hard to club him at the back of the neck. His eyes cross as he falls to the floor.
Oh,
Mirabella exclaims softly. Oh is right, Arsinoe says. She reaches down and relieves the lead guard of her keys, then takes up the lantern they set near the door. Now, tear that skirt of yours to use for gags and let's get out of here. Jules's and Joseph's last meal was a good one. Their guards were kind and brought them roasted duck and bread and soft cheese, even a bag of sugared nuts from a street vendor.
I can't eat this, Jules says, and listens to Joseph toss his metal plate down.
Nor can I, Joseph replies. What's roasted duck when you're going to be dead in the morning? I can toss some to you, for Cam.
Jules nudges her plate toward the cougar, who lies with her head on Jules's knee. Camden will not even sniff at it.
She won't take it either.
She strokes the cat's broad golden head. She cannot believe that they will pass their last hours like this. She is numb, not even afraid. She has not been able to feel anything since the guard came to tell them that Arsinoe had been executed, and that they would be tied to posts in the morning and executed as well, their bodies left out for Mirabella to see. She hears Joseph moving in his cell, turning against the bars.
I keep thinking of what we should have done, he says. What we could have done differently.
But maybe there was nothing.
He snorts.
Sometimes you just lose. After all, someone has to.
I want Kate, Jules says, her throat tightening with tears. And Alice.
She wants Aunt Kara, and even Madrigal.
I know, Joseph says. I want them too. I wish we were anywhere else but in the belly of this castle. But Camden's here, and I'm here. Don't cry, Jules.
I have to tell you something.
She wipes at her cheeks. I have to tell you what Arsinoe told me about the low magic.
What low magic?
The night you came back, she did a love spell for us, but she did it wrong. She ruined it, and she thinks that's why you and Mirabella...
She stops. Joseph is quiet for a long time.
Joseph, don't you have anything to say?
Like what, Jules? He asks softly.
Well, do you think that's why it happened?
Arsinoe's low magic is so strong. It could have been. It really could have been.
I know what you're doing.
What?
Trying to forgive me, he says.
And she can hear the smile in his voice.
You don't want to go out there tomorrow still hating me.
I don't hate you.
I hope you don't.
But what happened with Mirabella was my fault. Maybe the magic put us in each other's path. Maybe it even helped us along. But that doesn't make me blameless, Jules. I made a mistake. I wish I hadn't, but it doesn't change what I did.
Jules knew all that, deep down. But she feels freer somehow now that he has said it.
Well, anyway, she says cheekily, I was just trying to make you feel better about it, since we're about to die.
Joseph laughs. How I love you, Jules.
Footsteps echo down the hall, and Jules wipes her tears on her sleeve.
No guard on patrol will see tear streaks on her face. Not ever.
What now?
Joseph asks. Jules stiffens when she hears a sound like a body falling.
Camden's ears prick, and she gets to her feet, tail ticking back and forth.
Jules! Arsinoe hisses. Jules, are you down here?
Arsinoe!
Jules and Camden scramble up to the bars as Arsinoe runs to them. They embrace her as well they can with hands and paws. Camden purrs and licks her face.
Camden, blech!
Arsinoe grins and wipes her cheek.
I might have licked you as well. I'm so happy to see you,
Jules gasps.
I thought you were dead. I thought they killed you.
Aye, they tried. But they tried the wrong way. They sent that sister of mine to poison me.
Arsinoe fumbles with a ring of keys until she finds the one that opens the door. Then she tosses the ring to Mirabella to open Joseph's.
Are you and Cam all right?
Jules steps out of the cell just as Joseph collides with them and kisses them each in turn. Girl, girl, cougar.
We're okay.
Good. We have to get out of here now.
Are you strong enough? Can you fight?
Jules clenches her fists.
That's a silly question.
She looks across the corridor at Mirabella and nods to her. Then she slips out of her friend's arms and lets Arsinoe lead the way out.
Greavesdrake Manor.
Nicholas helps her out of the carriage, and Catherine looks up nervously at the light from her bedroom windows. Her maids will have prepared the room, setting out vases of poisonous flowers and lighting candles with perfumed wax. They will have turned down the bed.
Catherine takes a deep breath.
No carriage ride from the city has ever been over so quickly. Nicholas pulls her up the path to the house, and Natalia's butler opens the door.
Edmund, she says.
Is Natalia at home?
She has not yet returned from the Volroy, my queen, he replies. But all has been made ready according to her specifications.
That is good.
Catherine stalls a little as he takes her cloak. The air on her shoulders makes her feel very bare.
Though I had expected that she would be here, or if not her, then Genevieve. Yet I suppose I should be glad that she is not here.
Enough,
says Nicholas, and pulls her close to kiss her neck. He takes up a lamp from the foyer table and leads her quickly down the hall. As they pass by the rooms, Catherine is gripped by an unexpected sadness. Soon she will say goodbye to Greavesdrake, to its ancient creaky floors and sunless rooms full of cold spots. After tonight, she will not return, not as she does now. Greavesdrake will no longer be home.
Nicholas, slow down. I will turn my ankle.
You will not, he laughs.
The house seems so empty. Where are the tittering maids, the spying servants? There is not so much as a rustling skirt darting out of their way. They reach her bedroom, and Nicholas tugs her through the doorway so hard that she nearly falls.
Inside, the space is lit softly with candles. The carpets and bed are strewn with red flower petals.
She has imagined this night before, but it was never Nicholas she imagined beside her.
Nicholas turns her to face him. Her breath is already fast.
I do not know why I am so nervous, she says.
Do not be.
He kisses her. It is not like Peter's kisses, not like a dam breaking. It will take some getting used to, but at least his lips are soft. He strips her of her gloves.
These scars, he stares at her hands. Will they fade?
I do not know, she says.